All right, everybody, thank you for joining me here today. I think we got some important things to go over together. And so, I want to make sure you're all fully equipped for what you're about to do, well, what we know you're all about to do. So please, take a seat. Let's get started. Etrus Pensempre, the potionsmith for the Golden Tree Guild.
Etrus, it's 3 a.m. Why did you call us here?
Motions to you all in the moonlight to please sit down in these carefully arranged chairs.
It's 11 p.m.
Yes, hurry, sit down. It's about to start.
Outside of his shack.
Selv, being the tallest of the guilders, naturally will gravitate towards the back and furthest away from whatever Etrus is about to demonstrate.
What's the distance the chairs are set up?
And can we triple it?
It's very close. It would be uncomfortably close even if you knew that there were probably going to be explosions involved.
Val will trust Etrus. Be like, I am excited to see what's happening.
So, Sophie, what's your next character?
Joke's on everyone. Mira Carter.
That'd be pretty good. Speaking of, everyone essentially in the guild hall is out here. That does include Mira Carter, Val's mom. That certainly includes all of you. That includes Mango. That includes Taroth the Familiar. That includes Berga. And even Hody and Colaprico are milling about. They're not really paying attention, but they're there. They like being involved, as you all know.
Val lures Hody to her lap.
Oh no, collateral damage.
Yeah.
Nothing bad will happen.
Yeah.
Canonically, this is a blanket of protection. Yeah.
Canonically, what that means is that you will have a donkey-shaped space on the bird marks around you. And Hody will hop away pleasedly. All right, everybody. I would like first my two assistants to please join me. First, you see Taroth start to amble up, kind of like a weird, like a spider monkey, you know, kind of arms akimbo, wings just like rustling. And you didn't think rustling could be really unsettling, but like it's like wet leather slapping together. And it's really bad. Yes. Demonstrations. And additionally, you see another individual step out. If they stepped out with more confidence and panache, would be a dramatic entrance, but unfortunately they kind of just side shuffled their way out to stand beside Etrus. You guys maybe you haven't met this individual. You've probably been alerted to the fact that this might be happening. Everybody, I believe you have heard of, but maybe not met, my new assistant, Anthony. And a teenager, probably 17, looks like a lizard person.
Cool.
Is standing there with peak awkwardness. Could not be stranger, hunched over shoulders, very, like, almost skeletally thin, and he just kind of raises one clawed hand and gives you guys a very sheepish wave. He says, very good, Anthony.
Val gives him a supportive thumbs up.
And he says, all right, well, let's start with the boring stuff. All those other guys, they're still kind of poking around that airship that you guys got. What they've been able to get so far, though, got 5,000 gold pieces, whatever.
Hey.
That's fine. Got a bunch of, like, supplies and, like, food and whatever. Fine. You know, you got, from the captain, we got that wand of fireball. Pretty fun.
That'll be.
It's fine. I mean, wands, if you like wands. You also got 3 more wands of magic missile. Similarly, again, trying to figure out exactly how many charges there are, but, you know, interesting or whatever. You got some, some kind of fiery weaponry, some fire pikes, some fire axes, that sort of deal. You got a bunch of rounds of magical ammo, you know, your crossbow bolts, your arrows, your whatnots.
And is Etrus just, like, setting these out in front of him, or is he just telling us about them?
So he is gesturing at a pile.
Okay.
That is over there that Taroth is dragging out individually one by one, including just bags of arrows and bolts that are just glowing at the end. And very clearly, some amount of actively incendiary.
Okay, cool, cool, cool.
You know, you got, you also got the captain's, and he actually flips open some notes on this one. So, custom magical repeating crossbow with a compass in the stock. So that's interesting, I suppose. Got a bunch of maps, really interesting maps, actually. We need to cross-reference those at some point. You got more of those kind of zippy rope kind of deals, go up and down real fast on the ropes. Like 20 of those, so I would, for testing, would appreciate between 1 and 5 of those. And again, there's probably some, like, I don't know, maybe some other stuff kicking around, but those are the main stuff, the interesting bits and bobs. Now, though, and he kind of smirks, it's like, I have some extra merchandise that I've been brewing up these last few weeks that I think you're going to be very pleased with. And he kind of like straightens up a little bit. Anthony, the vials, please. And Anthony ducks into his little shack and comes out with a sack of clanking things.
No.
Yeah, definitely want that happening.
Yep. That is not the proper transportation procedure.
All right, boring stuff.
Selva's now 90 feet.
Etrus is yelling very loudly, seemingly unperturbed by your distance. Probably pretty used to it by now. Now, we'll start again with the boring stuff. You know, got some superior healing potions, couple of those, couple of the greater healing potions. I didn't bother with the kind of the basic whatever. We're all beyond that right now, I think, right? Got a couple protection from energies, you know, for your Ooh. Your magical whatnots and protecting from against them, I guess. Now, Anthony, please. Turns over, he just kind of whispers to Anthony. I would like to present this quarter's potional creations. And at this, Taroth has dragged out a crash test dummy.
Cool.
That he has clambered on top of the shoulder of and is perching and just stroking its chin. And he's like, all right, first up, Anthony. Puts his hand on his shoulder. You do the honors. And Anthony, wide-eyed, reaches in the sack and pulls out a vial that you guys maybe seems familiar, but boy, you see a lot of vials hanging around Etrus. Now, I believe you are familiar with a previous iteration of this one, but Anthony, why don't we show them what greater do fire on them does?
Yeah.
Val backs up. Val immediately backs up.
It's too late. Anthony has already loosed it. And boy, Anthony...
Do we need our goggles?
Cashman like hits the deck. It's like...
Anthony rolls an 18 on the die.
Yeah, Anthony got an arm on him.
And absolutely pegs this crash test dummy, including Taroth on it. And the whole thing is caught up in a giant inferno and lights up the night air for, you must assume, blocks, if not upwards of miles away.
Cool.
Val immediately casts sending to whoever, and she would know this information, is on patrol.
Yes.
Yeah.
Realistically, probably Berga has already informed, has already told people that, like, this is gonna happen. There's actually several Red Guard members with fantasy fire extinguishers.
I want Val to somehow develop, because she's got those sunglass type things, like spring-loaded ones that will, like, she could hit something and they'll just
transition
slam
lenses.
Down. Because,
yes. Greater do fire on them. I mean, it's a classic for a reason. And now just bigger, badder, bigger.
I know Etrus doesn't, but does Anthony still have his eyebrows?
if he had body hair at this point, absolutely not. Well, but his clothing is singed.
Yeah, okay, fair.
And Checkers at this point is just actively weeping. Etrus, it's beautiful. My God. 50 of them.
Thank you, my friend. So you're going to get two of those.
Yeah.
And as a fun follow-up, kind of the internal combustion version of that, a do fire on me.
I'm sorry, what?
It's a do fire on me.
Why would we need to do fire on us internally?
He, like, looks at Checkers as the only person who would understand.
I don't get it. Explain it for the lay people, Etrus.
Is this like how I breathe cold can then breathe
fire? No.
Is this like a hot cocoa kind of thing? Is it a warm?
Do I
on
turn
the
into a human fireball?
That I'm
mortal?
Working. So there is a greater do fire on me, which will do that.
Cool.
But you may recall from the events involving a various festival that it was not exactly a stable formula at this juncture.
Correct.
And it has actually become less stable since then. So,
oh, no.
Work in progress. No, like this is... So the way that magical weapons and such work... Well, how to describe it? I guess how I would say is that it adds an additional 1d6 of fire damage upon any weapon attacks that you may or may not be using.
I see.
Beautiful.
Similarly, I have furthered this technology. Well, you got one of those, and you got a do acid on me. So same principle.
Interesting.
Acid. And, wait, a do stone on me.
A new stone, you don't say.
Ooh, huh.
And that one is different, but I'm trying it out for branding purposes to kind of keep with the naming convention.
Smart.
So with that one, well, it's kind of like the greater do fire on me, but it's you turn into stone when you drink it. Like a statue.
Neat.
like a full statue.
Yeah, and you just like are there.
Is that good? Do we want that?
Well, I'm not the adventurer, so that's like up to y'all if that's something.
I'll figure out something to do with this one.
Yeah, it's like a magical stone, though. Yeah. So it's like,
is it permanent?
No, it is somewhere between 3 and 60 minutes. That's the range I can give you on that one.
I feel like we can work with that.
Yeah. You know, it's you never know when you want to become a statue.
That's what I'm saying. Or have someone else become a statue.
Etrus, you are just giving us paints to work with.
Thank you. Exactly. Y'all are this kind of artists. I'm the other kind of artist. I'm the one making and huffing the paint, and y'all are the one who are painting with it. And that's all. Another kind of riff on things. Demonic assistant, please approach. Taroth. Flap, flap, horrible wet leather sounds. Yes. Please, give a gob of this one. And he pulls out another vial that has just a floating, glowing bug in it. It looks like it's floating on top of the liquid as if it is just a fly that has been caught in water. He's like, yeah, give that a glug. And Taroth's like, yes, what fell powers does this give me? And downs it, chugs it, and starts cackling. And Etrus bends down, pulls him up, and like palms him like a basketball, and then shakes him around a little bit like a basketball, or like a little, you know, kind of like a bell. And he starts glowing very brightly. Now this one is a me light, and okay. You take it, and then you glow for an hour or so.
I like it.
Again, that's up to y'all about who wants to glow when and why.
I'm just imagining, you know that video where like some guy's got a 2000 kilowatt like light or something, and like he's just shaking him shaking him, and just like suddenly the city begins to glow.
Yes. It keeps extending for a little bit farther than you're expecting.
God, our neighbors must hate us.
Yeah.
You guys, as you may recall, are put on the pretty vacant side of town,
sure,
and
are.
For a reason. And he pulls out a couple of like very small packages for this one. Actually, he's like, "This one I've kind of been able to really. You have to really condense it. You know, kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
Squeeze it.
We gotta really
concentrate.
Squeeze it into a concentrate. these are spear mints.
I'm so excited for where this is going.
So. You have one, right?
Uh-huh.
And he unwraps it, and it looks like a rectangle. And he says, you have one. There's something about it that just, you know, kind of it makes it a little more interesting, makes people like you a little more. freshens the breath up a little bit. You get a little extra on, you know, when you're trying to persuade someone to something. A little extra something, something. If you have three of them, well, spears happen.
Nice.
Spears happen.
Yep.
Cool.
Checker just goes,
It was a nice,
Jonathan's at the table, subtly reaching out. Does anybody notice? Yeah.
And there's five of them.
No. We're not taking anything yet. It will all be decided after the presentation.
Fine.
Etrus, how come there's only two of these then?
Etrus looks at you and gives you a wink.
All right.
And the last two, this stuff I want y'all to be careful with.
Uh-oh. This we have to be careful
this
with.
This face is exactly the face we have.
What a concern of interest.
My eyebrows are up.
Yeah. It's nothing really, you know, it's just kind of a new field for me. You know, I like explode, implode, your various plodes. I'm pretty good at. So this one, it's actually so new that I'm not sure what the name's going to be yet. So if y'all have any ideas, please let me know. Right now this is go there later.
I don't know about that one, Andres.
Like I said, this one is not for, I mean, none of these are for public consumption, but you get what I mean. This one,
yeah.
I don't want you to tell anyone else the name of this yet until we come up with a better name for it. But it is very interesting. You drink this, right? And it lasts for a little while. And then you look at a place that you want to go, right? It's like a 60 feet or so away. Mm-hmm. You look at that place. You think about it. And then you go there. Like magic. Like, it's not like you walk there. Like, you are there.
Cool.
So like a gulp and jump.
Yeah, kind of. So, I think we all know which ones you're most excited to use, he says, looking at the volatile glowing chemicals in front of him. But, you know, this is all the stuff that's been cataloged for you guys. So, you know, I don't know how this really works. Divvy accordingly.
Val just starts clapping of like, yes. Yeah, good presentation. We're
all still alive, yes. Good.
And he looks very sheepish and bows. He insists that Taroth and Anthony also bow. And they are...
Val keeps clapping for Anthony and Taroth.
Berger's like, oh, very good, very good. Now let's please get all of the incendiaries off of the lawn, please. And so now we have done our inventory management. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Reckless Attack.
Hi. Oh, hello.
I am, as always, your GM, Nathan, and I'm trying a new thing, which is a 20-minute later title card drop.
We really keep
welcome to the mid-roll.
Just pushing this further and further. Yeah. Like, minute 50. It's like, yeah. And welcome to...
This has been Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. Sitting next to me is the ever-excellent...
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I, as always, once again, am playing...
Selv Asterlin,
the Dragonborn Monk, who... is excited to see these do fire on them bigger, greater do fire on them.
Oh, it should have been bigger. Damn it.
Do fire on them, comma, bigger.
Bigger. Yeah. You know, we could always fix that in post.
Yeah, he can change out some labels. That's easy.
Yeah, that's good. And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Caskrin Brightmane, a dwarven sorcerer. And I maintain that...
I'm getting more used to that,
right?
By the way.
So, yeah. 11 p.m. when Etrus has woken up, everyone is still past Caskrin's bedtime, and so he's still a little grumpy. They had to wake up. As nice as all this is, he is in his baby blues, his little slippers. He did have to get pulled out of bed to attend this. And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and it's just your frog pals, Mango and Junior. And Checkers just calls out, hey guys, look at this! And downs the potion of Do Stone on me.
Absolutely not!
Great.
So the next time you look
Checkers
at him,
Checkers is stoned.
He's just a statue, just like got a potion vial to his mouth and just licks it all at you. No, that's not true.
Please tell me that there's no antidote. Though.
Yeah, save that one for later. But he's very excited about all these various things that
Etrus has presented to the Golden Tree on perhaps our final journey away from Egmar.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human asterisk cleric asterisk of the Arcana Domain. And I do hope it's not our last journey out of Egmar. We should come back and have multiple more journeys to and from Egmar.
Finally, the guilders have come back to Egmar.
So, the Golden Tree Guild is setting out once again.
Day.
For adventure!
In style.
In style and no longer touching the ground.
And adventure with a capital A.
Yes, exactly.
I actually like this less because I would like to be touching the ground.
Yeah, I was going to ask because Cass was always grumpy that travel took so long, but now it will be less long, but higher.
Yeah, and I have conflicting feelings about that.
Yeah. And you do get to sleep in a comfy bed.
That is the thing that's really keeping me on board right now. Like, I don't need to be scooped in order to get onto the plane or the airship.
No tarps are involved, theoretically, at this juncture.
But the only reason I am going is because we're glamping, basically. I have a cabin.
That is very true. You guys are off on kind of the first leg of this kind of weird, still kind of mysterious journey, going off in your new airship.
The captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign.
Yes. Watch out for any turbulence. By the way, there will be some.
Checkers would never turn that on.
No. Yeah. True?
That is true.
He ripped that button out.
Yeah.
And you guys are off to one of the former seats of power of the Pentarchy, a once great coastal city that was a huge hub of commerce and travel and was really one of the big gateways of this whole continent that a little while ago was maybe wiped out slightly when potentially a whole sun fell on it. You guys are off to the location of Sunfall, to the Deadlands that you have been before, so it's not entirely new territory. It's just the territory is unbelievably barren, seems to suck all life force and magic out of everything that touches it. And there are, you know, kind of many, 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 many stories, rumors, tales, etc. of many, many, many people who go in and don't ever come back. So, speaking of beds, of ensuring that they are soft, of making sure you have all the things that you need. We're kind of entering into classic Dungeons & Dragons podcast amorphous preparation time, where you guys have some amount of time. You know, I think we've kind of given a flexible, maybe it's a day, maybe it's a couple days, we'll kind of see how it feels, where people are taking a look at your guys' ship, are making sure it is all good, cataloging everything that is there, trying to learn what they can before you guys head out, and you guys get to rest a little bit and prepare for going to the place that no one ever, 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 ever has come back from. So what are some things that you guys are making sure happens before you disembark?
Does anyone remember the giant's name who helped us?
Darthon.
Darthon.
Mm-hmm. Inspiration, please.
I mean, yeah, you know what? I hate begging.
Yeah.
But also, I do like sucking up and accurate recall of lore knowledge. Yeah. So, all right, I'll give it to you.
I also remember that, Nathan.
Yeah.
But you didn't turn to me with a shit-eating grin and be like,
Darthon.
Yeah.
You didn't speak over everyone else to ensure.
I was secretly hoping that Jonathan would remember that. Mm-hmm. You know, does that count?
And that makes you a good
I can name other NPCs. Yeah. Berga is one.
And such.
Please.
Yes, Sophie.
Val would like to send a message to Darthon.
Oh, okay.
Just being like, this isn't the actual message because I only have 25 words.
And similarly, as we may recall, Darthon is occasionally verbose and difficult to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine both of you would probably spend a good amount of time crafting an appropriate 25 words, and I, the GM, will assume that Val has teamed up with her mom to perfectly curate mm-hmm. the exact 25 words to essentially accomplish her meaning.
Basically, it's like, we're headed back your way. Do you need anything? We can drop a care package.
Lovely.
Thanks for saving our lives. Would you like a care package?
Hope you're good.
Hope you're good.
Yeah.
We have Garrett's popcorn, and we have some deep dish pizza. I know that's big in Agmar, right?
He expresses shock, surprise. He is delighted to hear from you. He only uses two words to say all that because of the efficiency
the
of
giant,
language.
Yeah.
He would love a care package. They would love a care package. He and his, kind of situationship. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. They work together. They live together. They're the only two giants there. It's the whole thing. And also really wanted to make sure that you guys had heard that there was maybe an ultra giant outside.
Val will send another message being like, thank you. Yes, you do know about the ultra giants. We're headed back to the Deadlands to hopefully do something about it. Do you have any tips?
How you doing?
He says, let me think about some tips. I will definitely have it to you in the next couple days. I usually am living in a mountain, but care package sounds great.
Did he list any specific things in the care package?
Well, care package. It has a certain meaning, obviously, in ancient giants. And
Val and her mom will really get to every level of the yeah. care package in his dialect of giant.
Right. Val and Mira know, and he knows. That doesn't mean that you and I have to know. The players at the table, we don't need to know. But there is a canon list that goes into a giant care
package.
There
must be like a poem or an epic or something that describes what's in this care package of an ancient giant that you guys find.
Yeah, precisely. That is exactly... There is a canon care package that comes from exactly like the Ballad of Gilgamesh, but giants.
Yeah. Val and her mom spent some time doing that. Getting that care package.
Do that.
Yeah.
But that's delightful. I'll give you an inspiration for that, actually. Yay. That is very nice.
So, knowing that we are headed to the Deadlands and magic may or may not be working correctly there, Selv is going to do a few things. One of them is just pick up a bunch of mundane stuff that might come in handy while being out exploring, depending on different situations where we need to go.
Yes.
So, a few things like a tent, you know, for some kind of shelter. Make sure we have enough food, maybe some rope, a couple of 10-foot poles for poking at areas that may or may not be stable, torches and lanterns, maybe some extra oil. All of the old school first edition stuff my characters generally carried around with them.
Understood.
Before even, you know, deciding to leave the front door.
I love this a lot. I think this is a great idea. And again, it really reinforces that no one knows what is there. No one knows what you guys are about to face. No one knows what's going to work, what's going to not. No one knows. But something I will mention briefly is that you are able to find what you're looking for, but it takes a little while because they've kind of been picked over.
Oh, sure. Yeah, defense of the city and all, or just people leaving are probably taking...
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is between... requisition supplies, that sort of thing, and people buying out these sorts of things as they flee. You just have to go to multiple shops now instead of going to the general store.
The other thing I want to make sure that Selv does is to come back to the little hot spring, and I'm going to use shape water to basically create a 5-foot block of ice that will float in there, and Selv will just climb onto that and meditate for a little while.
I guess, what does Selv try not to think about as he's trying to clear his mind atop his ice block? What's that nagging little thought that just kind of keeps that you know, again, you're very well practiced. You can still dismiss it as you were trained to do, but what's the recurring thing?
It's that the things that Selv can typically rely on, so for instance, his other three companions' magic, will not be available. And so the things that they had taken for granted up to this point as just being able to do will not be able to be done while in this area.
And so there's kind of like that uncertainty of the future. And did I bring enough stuff that's regular that will work to allow us to survive long enough? And so there's these lists going through Self's mind. And even if he dismisses a little bit of it, something creeps back in.
Yeah.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the Midroll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show as well as our new Reckless of Snacks series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
I think, so there's a couple of things that Castron wants to do before we leave the city and perhaps go on to our final destination in the Deadlands.
Capital F, capital D, coming to theaters near you.
Similar to Self, Castron is making sure that we have like hot weather gear and are suitably dressed for the environment. He is, he's kind of trended much more towards the magical in the last couple of levels, mm-hmm. the last couple of weeks and months, and he's gotten used to that to some degree. So he is kind of like retraining himself to like, you know, he's got like a dagger, a side sword. He's got like extra weapons in his bag that he kind of stopped carrying because he didn't really need them anymore.
Yeah, of course.
And I kind of imagine, too, he went for a while without wearing his, like, heavy armor. Because it's just, like, it takes so long to put on, and it's a whole thing. And now he's, like, starting to get back into it. I do also, similar to when Castron first moved into the Red City of Agmar, he visited the church. He visited the mm-hmm. House of the 12 Gods. He's been kind of going back, you know, somewhat regularly, mm-hmm. Especially with all these adventures, but he's going back once again. And as he enters this kind of grand, kind of like Roman construct with the pillars, he sees the different, I want to say, the different areas that are
Yeah, like alcoves.
Yeah, almost. The alcoves, yeah, that are each celebrating the gods as well as some of the lesser saints. And he goes up to one that is well familiar to him. This is, I think I've mentioned before, but is a saint that kind of roughly translates to like Saint of the North Star. And it is a saint that's well worshipped in Lotros by the sailors because they use it to find their way. It's a saint of direction, of travel, and of a return to home. So he goes there, lays a few, you know, offerings, says a few words, takes note of the other worshippers in the area. And I kind of imagine, too, the church has taken on a heavier tone mm-hmm. of late. Whereas there were more candles burning, now there are fewer. It seems like the whole church is just a little dimmer. More people pray in hushed tones than perhaps before. And Castron says his piece, lays his offerings, and leaves. I think the last thing that he would do, you know, he does, he's going to make the rounds. Like, he's going to say bye to Namgar. He's going to say bye to Azan, and he'll make sure to, you know, make the rounds. But he does take particular time to talk with Vina Calvetta before he goes. And I actually kind of imagine this. Castron had gone in with the intent that he was going to, you know, thank her for watching over them, for giving him mentorship, for being their contact, helping them adjust to the city when they first entered. And she kind of flips it on him, where she mentions all of the ways that the Golden Tree Guild has saved the city, all the valuable information that they've brought to the Red Guard. And it is kind of this moment of like, no, Castron, we should be thanking you.
for the service that you've done in the city. I think the only thing I would add that I think Vina would say to that is you guys are a member of the city. And that's all she cares about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you guys live there and work here and care about the same people that she does. And few people in the short amount of time that you guys have been here have contributed in the ways that you guys have. And it's a real thing and a real appreciated and special thing, especially knowing what you guys are about to do.
Mm-hmm. And so Kaskrin leaves her office with like a respectful salute. And I'll say heads back to the guild hall and begins kind of moving his things onto the airship.
So Checkers surprisingly doesn't really do a lot of preparation. He trusts in his allies. He trusts in his own capabilities. And he knows that basically wherever the Golden Tree goes, they're going to be able to make it through. But he does think about what it is that only he can do in this moment. And he's taking this surprisingly seriously, both because, you know, this is his first foray on the Skystalker. He's responsible for this voyage. He's responsible for these people. And he wants to make sure that he does a good job. But also because of the location that we're going to and why we're going there in the mm-hmm. first place. This is not just a random trip to the Deadlands. We're going there to find out more about Far-Eye Grumbingle, the Grung that we encountered in the dream that Celestia Dreamweaver showed us. This is maybe a conversation that Checkers has been dreading for a while, because this is the first time that he has really had to, in a way, confront his past.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Golden Tree is going to get every edge that they can in this trip, on this journey, Checkers has to kind of deal with this. So he would actually gather the rest of the guild up and kind of share a little bit of information that he never would have before. And this would be more around where the Pentarchy might have gotten this power, where the elementals might come into play here. And Rixia has a lot of different forms of power. You know, we have the 12 gods, we have the saints, the dragons, but the elementals haven't really come up until recently. The powered suit of armor that the first mate was wearing was powered by an elemental. But Checkers and his clan, the Ingaton, have a history with the elementals. You know, he knows them to be very capricious. He knows them to be very powerful, spiteful, and oftentimes dangerous to deal with.
So I just want to get kind of the broad strokes reception, I guess, to this. Both to the information that, hey, elementals, I know a little bit about them. Which is a reminder of, you know, kind of on the world building side, they're not super widespread in Rixia. They're one of those things where dragons were around and disappeared, elemental magic and kind of the access to elemental planes and stuff is not really magic that's had a big presence in Rixia. So it is very interesting historical information, but also this is Checkers talking about A, something he knows about, has academic information on, and has biographical experience with, which is, you guys know, not information he shares lightly.
Mal is trying to play it so cool.
Yeah.
I am curious, actually, because, like, is Checkers giving, like, hey, this is the fire elemental, this is what it does, or, like, I'm kind of imagining it more as tales and folklore.
Yeah, it's definitely more around, like, the rituals that people do in response to these elementals. Like, hey, when you see this, when it disappears, like, this is something that happened off screen, but, like, after we learned that there was a fire elemental trapped in that armor, like, Checkers would have performed a ritual to sort of give respect to it so it wouldn't come back and, like, you know, fight us.
Yeah, yeah.
Those kinds of things of how to show respect, how to show care, stuff that, you know, Checkers has been drilled into his very bones, but would otherwise never come up.
But something that is clearly demonstrative of a wide array of experience and, like, cultural practice around it, where it's like, it's insight, I guess.
Yep. So Checkers spends most of his time, you know, writing some of this down and like giving it out to I'm sure like Val has lots of questions, Self has lots of questions. Like he spends his time making sure that the group is prepared enough to be able to handle these situations once we get there.
The night before the guild is set to leave, Val and her mom can be found in the guild hall kitchen with, you know, I imagine there's like a giant island in the middle of it, and it's just covered in ingredients. And Val and her mom are like mostly quietly going about making trail mix and granola for everyone, including the crew. And they are kind of falling into a familiar pattern of like helping each other, having kind of some light conversation, but kind of both knowing that this might be the last time they do this, and more trying to be present in it to honor that than say anything about it. And they go about their evening preparing.
You guys are, again, very in sync. You know what you're doing. And it's easy to say that you don't need to say anything, right? But between the two of you, you don't, truly. Everything that needs to be expressed has already been and is understood. And like you said, you fall into this kind of beautiful rhythm of pouring in toasted oats and dried fruits and making little cucumber sandwiches, because Craig One is really just kind of a pain in the ass, but, you know, best foot forward. And you're just in this zone. And you're, like you said, you're present, you're there. The task and the work and the service is what you're there for, and it's giving you that meaning and focus that you're sharing with your mom. When the last fantasy Ziploc bag is zipped up, you both, I imagine, have kind of that, like a contented tiredness. You let the last little breath at the bottom of your lungs out at the same time. And there's just a pause, a shared space and shared breath. And for a moment, for the first time in who knows how many hours you've been packing, you get the sense that your mom's not sure what she should do next. Like, what's the, how do you transition out of this? But before anything awkward breaks the moment, something else awkward breaks the moment, and you hear a choked sob coming from the doorway as Berga has clearly been watching and is covered with tears all over her jerkin, her face, everything, and just wheels in and gives you guys a hug,
a big hug.
Old group hug. The next day is the day. We will assume it's been a few days since you have, you know, since you kind of came to the city and you've been able to rest, to restock, resupply, center yourselves. All of the various experts have all concluded, yes, this is a strange piece of equipment that we do not understand, that we could spend years and years studying and maybe still not understand, but we can't see any weird glyphs that will explode on you. And it seems safe enough, and it is as ready as it can be. And as you guys have that last minute flurry of grabbing your bags and packing and all that kind of stuff to,
oh my god, telescopes,
get to the airport in time. We know that Cass has a telescope, at
That's
least.
True.
He can't, true. Cass cannot be trusted to share. We all get telescopes.
It's a pretty small one, but yeah, reasonable. Eventually, you know, the door kind of closes behind you. Berger's with you. Etrus is with you. Anthony got in early on his intern shift to be there with you guys. Taroth stayed inside, but that's because Berg assumed that that would kind of throw the vibe off.
I still imagine Taroth is like on one of the upstairs windows with like the curtain pulled away, just like staring at everybody.
Yellow cat eyes somehow peering through the darkness. and Mira is there. And waiting outside is everyone you know. Everyone in Agmar you can imagine showing up, named or unnamed. That one shawarma guy who off screen you have visited every Wednesday for the last 3 months. Pete himself of Pete's Meat is there. Members of the Red Guard, Namgar, Vina, Jack Brill. People you've saved. People from the library. People that maybe you even recognize from the caravan that brought you here, who have been here as long as you guys and have stuck it out till now, are there. And it just kind of parts as you leave, and they follow you guys out to the secondary walls of the city where you guys have parked your ship, where members of the Bones are waiting. And by that I mean every member of the Bones is out and waiting, standing in their typical perfect unison. The shield steps forward and extends a big old gauntleted hand as the leader of the Bones wishes you good luck, claps you all on the shoulder, introduces you to the members of the Bones that you guys have requested join you on this trip to keep an eye on things. Not the crew necessarily, but, you know, things. They each introduce themselves to you one at a time. And the first one is one that you sort of recognize, but haven't quite placed it. They're kind of hard to distinguish at first until you really figure out who they are. And it first comes up to Checkers. And in this kind of a higher toned feminine voice says, "It is great to meet you all again for the first time. We have encountered one another before. Technically, this is also an apology for, I am told, having chased you several miles through the wilds of the forests. I am the Seeker, and I'm told you four are the ones that retethered me."
And Checkers has this moment of realization as he looks into the Seeker's helmet and is just like, "Oh, hey, yeah, welcome back.
I was told that you were quite the prey. I look forward to getting to know you." Goes around, introduces themselves, zip lines up. And
what a terrifying sight.
Yeah, right.
I know they already move very fast on their own, but an undead, like, 300-pound centurion just, like, being weightless, flying up a rope. Terrifying.
And the fact that they could just jump off of the ship,
too. Be fine.
Just, yeah.
It's one of those moments where every once in a while, you know, you've gotten used to them, right? They still have that weird vibe, but you've gotten used to them. They are as normal as weird undead centurions can be.
Mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, you get that reminder of like, oh, they were very scary back in the day. Huh? They were like really scary. And that was one of those moments.
They had one weakness in that they couldn't fly. And now that's
And now we've given them that ability.
Precisely. And the other one, actually, you do recognize. It was one of the ones who actually helped watch the ship when you guys first arrived, who kind of met you guys and just zipped up. Also comes up, introduces himself. It's herself, himself. And this second one, a little bit thinner, but still obviously giant, massive, etc., extends a gauntleted hand and says, "Hello, my name is The Burden. I'm really, really looking forward to this. Thank you."
Please know, Val, straight face, Sophie laugh, not Val.
Sure?
Not Val.
Do I go up?
Yeah, you know,
whenever you are ready.
This is the mechanism, you know, kind of like Val will show him how to hook it on.
It takes a while.
Val's patient.
Several of the crew members who are also there have to help. But soon enough, the Burden also zips up.
God, I already love him. Nathan, you can't take him away. I can't. I am no longer can say things aren't knives, so I get it.
You've used your one blanket for the campaign. At that, other members of the crew who already are kind of hooked up with their devices start rappelling up, leaving only Sub-Captain Silvertooth, who hangs around just for a moment. Kind of takes a breath, looks at you all, looks at the situation, looks at the crowd gathered, maybe locks eyes for a moment with the very intense stare of Vina Calvetta. Sees Checkers giving thumbs up.
Multiple thumbs up in the background.
And he says, "All right, daylight is burning. Let's all get aboard." And he snaps on, zips up. And up front are the members of the guild. I mean, really, it's Berga, Anatris, and Mira. I imagine there was some amount of kind of goodbyes, etc., leading up. They're all crying, all three of them, at various degrees.
Vale is also crying.
Yeah, Etrus is...
Kashkin's getting there.
Yeah. Etrus is the ugliest crier, we can all agree. There's a bit of a wail. Mir, I'd imagine, is, you know, kind of the classic sort of stoic, happy, sad, conflicted, we've had our moment, but how can you possibly have enough moments? And Berga is like slumped shoulders, like huge saucer plate eyes, watching you guys go with a look of still kind of resolute pride alongside it.
Can I ask for one thing?
Please?
Please, please, please give to me a gift, and that I would like a nubbin update from our small donkey.
Oh my god, you're so
Pody.
Right.
I'm imagining Colaprico is in Berga's lap, and like Hody is next to her.
A million percent, yes.
But two emotional support animals.
I apologize.
Yes.
Thank you for holding me accountable.
I kind of want us to lift off in the airship and then... See,
or scuttle underneath the ship. Yes.
some kind of flying
either way.
Type creature.
On Berga's lap is Colaprico, who, while well trained, is often a noisy chicken. But in this moment, this raucous rooster is dignified, silent. Somehow seems to maybe feel the measure of the moment, and. Hody stands next to Mira, just kind of braying a little confusedly, but absentmindedly in kind of a cheerful, boy, a lot of people here, isn't that kind of fun way?
All to see me.
Hody gives a little stomp, a little sneeze, and it's a violent sneeze, but the two nubbins just shoot out an extra 3 inches. Is there anything else? Before you guys embark on one of the most brave, foolhardy, dangerous, stupid, uninformed, heroic, wonderful journeys anyone could go on.
So before Selv actually ascends up onto the airship, he kind of turns and faces everybody that came out. And just gives a very deep bow and then says,
"We will see you again."
Hooks on and goes up to the ship.
Kaskrin says, as he kind of clips himself in, partly to himself, partly to those closest to him. He says, "There's the family that you're born with and the family that you find. Now more than ever, I feel like I have found the family that I choose to be with." He takes one last look around at the people, takes another look up at the ship, presses the button, and ascends into the sky.
And Checkers and Mango jump towards the ropes leading up to the Sky Stalker and just says, "And if you need anything while we're gone, check out the Frog Squad!" and uses this as an advertising opportunity for his little group of orphans.
As you zip up, flyers start to rain down.
He throws out pamphlets for everyone, mm-hmm. tells them where the guild hall is, and ascends up into the airship.
Val pulls a notebook out, hands to Berga, whispers, "This is all the information I have on who is in the Frog Squad and their current logistical operations. I hope that helps." And gives Berga a hug.
She is beyond verbal at this juncture. isn't as loud as Etrus, but is as emotional. You can tell is trying to say something, but it just comes up. And just, you are crushed by biceps. And it is comforting.
Val sees how kind of flailing Etrus has gotten at this point and just gives like a
rolling on the ground,
a shoulder squeeze, and then goes in for a hug from her mom.
She, in that moment, to no one else, says something softly to you.
Val backs away, looks at the crowd and to the people closest to her, and just says thank you and heads up.
The rope is hauled back on board. There's a array of nautical shouting that happens. Things about, I don't know, hoisting such and such and manning the what-sits and be sure to scoop out the who knows what. Within a few minutes, the airship pulls away from the red city of Agmar. And on the horizon, Golden Tree Guilders are treated to a few sights. They see landmarks in the distance that they've seen or maybe only seen on maps or have journeyed days to. Can see their city, can still see all the people down below waving up at them. And huge mountain ranges, beautiful forests, the runic road lighting up underneath you. And also, to the southwest, you see a black cloud of ash, swirling, growing over what you know to be Deepwood, where you know there is an ultra giant waking up. We'll see you next week. Goodbye, everyone.